Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Patriots Playbook for a Thursday. And Eric Scalavino is actually present and accounted for today.
Sorry, I'm not actually in the playbook. I'm in my signed copy of Rhode Island Radio. That's what I've stepped into today. Thank you very much, John.
An early Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome.
I like
it. Hot off the presses.
It is. I love it.
Hot off the presses.
Eric's, I'm making the noise
Eric's,
with the book
Eric's,
here.
Eric's over here putting his face in the book. Remember the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High when the kids got their exams and they all stuck their faces in smelling the mimeograph stuff? That's what Eric's doing right now.
I'm flipping the pages. You can hear that noise.
It is. Smelling the mimeograph. Yeah. Fresh off the presses. Well, you're very welcome. You tolerate me enough here on the program. So.
Oh, stop that now. That false modesty of yours.
Well, you know, it is what it is. According to
I'm glad I could be here today, though, because the PR department actually scheduled us conveniently for a locker room to be after my 3 o'clock appearance.
Oh, that's what it is. Then that makes it actually.
Yesterday they had us at 2:15.
Took care of you 2:15, right?
So I couldn't stick around.
Right, Saturday. Precisely. All right. So we have this little football game on Monday night, which is going to be pretty cool, I think.
Yeah. It's a great one.
He said understatedly.
It's a great one.
Mark Vandermeer, who is the play-by-play voice of the Houston Texans, he's going to join us in 20 minutes. And then, of course, Russell Baxter in the 3 o'clock hour. We will also get to some of the Bill Belichick and Tom Brady from earlier this week. Just because of the significance of the game. It's a significant game. Those two guys are obviously focal points, and we'll hit some of that for you in hour number two of the program today. In the meantime, you know, I know there's been a lot of conjecture back and forth. Oh, and by the way, because it is Thursday, it's Prediction Thursday. We have Nitpick Tuesday. We have Prediction Thursday. So if you have some thoughts on predicting the game, give us the score, give us the winner, and how you think it's all going to break down. And once again, as we do every week, if somebody nails the score, we have a Patriots yearbook that we'll send to you. So if you want to do that, then by all means, hit us up, webradio@patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline is 508-298-0398. On Facebook, it's John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name, and Twitter is @JRBroadcaster. So you can consider your score and then let it rip. This one, to me, I've tried to go back and forth with this, Eric, but this one, to me, who's it really more important for? If you look at it strictly from a one-loss point of view, you'd have to go New England just because if the Patriots lose this one, they have no shot, really, realistically, I don't think, of a bye in the opening round. Now, a lot can happen in the last 4 weeks of the regular season. I realize that. But I think, realistically speaking, you're probably looking at the from the outside in on one of the top two spots in the AFC. That having been said, Houston has a tremendous amount to play for because Matt Schaub's never won a playoff game. They only got into the playoffs for the first time just last year. Gary Kubiak basically came back from the dead, I think, as a head coach a couple of years ago, right before they hired Wade Phillips, I think, ironically, as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And so the Texans have been thought of as the best, or certainly one of the two best, teams in the NFL almost all year long. And they've played well. They've won one what I would consider really good game, winning at Denver. But this is the next big test for them. And because they're still the relative new kid on the block, they just started playing football in 0-2, I kind of feel like Houston might have a little bit more to play for. What are your thoughts?
And before I answer that, am I showing my age by saying I still think of Gary Kubiak as John Elway's backup?
Yes. Hey, I still think of Gary Kubiak as that guy I hated playing for Texas A&M.
Okay, you're showing your age,
okay,
too.
Okay, so there you go. What I mean.
I agree with you that I think it's more important for the big picture, for the franchise, for Houston, to win this game, to make a statement game, to say, yeah, damn it, we deserve to be looked at as the best team with the best record in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because to be the best, you have to beat the best. And New England has been one of the best over the past decade, if not the best.
Right.
So from that perspective, I think Houston has more to gain. But short term, which is really all that matters right now, New England has definitely more to play for, as you spelled out with,
you think?
With the playoff seeding. Yeah,
because, overall?
Because I think if New England loses this game, they, like you said, don't get a bye, which makes it that much more of a difficult slog through the playoffs. And I think they end up losing to Houston again in the playoffs. And that game would have to be in Houston. So I think New England has way more to play
to
for.
To play for in this one?
In this one. Especially with the implications of a three-way tie with Denver and Baltimore. And New England having the edge if it comes down to that. It's more important for New England right now.
Okay. I think both sides have a legitimate argument here as to, oh, the game means more for us. Because I'm listening to some debate back and forth, reading a lot of it from the Houston perspective over the last couple of days. I can certainly understand where they feel. This is a benchwater mark game for them. If they could go into New England and beat New England after going into Denver and playing Denver, clearly the Houston Texans have to be thrust right at the top of the heap of Super Bowl favorites. They've never been that way in their decade, of being alive in the NFL as a franchise. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can understand why this game would be getting tremendous buzz in Houston and Southeast Texas. There's no question. But at the same time, while, the Patriots, I think, are kind of used to this, at least we are. I don't know how many of these guys in the locker room really are, save for maybe, about a third of them?
That might even be generous.
Yeah, that might be generous. So I actually think that, there's probably close to two-thirds of the players in that Patriots locker room who are looking at this like, yeah, all right, let's get it on. Let's go. We playing, good. I mean, and I think that kind of raw emotion is good from time to time in terms of reinvigorating a franchise, reinvigorating a team, a philosophy, and maybe even a fan base. Because we know here, our fans, tremendously spoiled over the success over the last decade plus now. And it's hard to see otherwise. It really is. I mean, players don't stick around as long as fans do. The only one is Tom Brady. and I think Tom is a bit of an anomaly. There's nobody else has been around as long as he has. So to that end, it's all new for a lot of people, and I think that benefits this team. Hopefully, they do a good enough job of downplaying it, which I think they do, but for the most part. But that they can figure out a way to use this to their advantage.
And the scheduling is in New England's favor because this is the third, not only is it here in Foxborough, it's the third road game in a row for Houston. And history is not kind to teams that have to play three games in a row on the road in that third game.
Which is why I slightly favor the Patriots, but I like Houston to cover. That's exactly the reason why. You just hit the nail on the proverbial head right there. Mm. I'm saying 23-20. And I'm giving my pick early based on, the conversation here. But just because I'm giving Houston all the benefit of the doubt here, I do think that, Merciless and Watt and some of those guys, I think they're going to play hell with the offensive line.
Yeah.
I think the Patriots will have a hard time. I say Brady probably gets dumped four or five times.
For the second week in a row.
For the second week in a row. Okay. Because I think if anybody can do it, I think this Houston team can.
Miami did it.
Miami
last week.
Did it, and
so certainly,
but Miami's not a slouch as a lot of people think they might be defensively. And Houston's a better team defensively. They put up those numbers all season long.
Oh yeah.
And I think the Patriots could play a better game overall and still allow Brady to get dumped on his butt four times. Mm. The question is, does he get shaken up on any of those? And that's, I think that's got to be cause for at least some concern. This is where having Rob Gronkowski, I'd say, would be a no-brainer. And I wouldn't hesitate at all to say that the Patriots would be a favorite in this game if Gronk were a playable entity. Mm-hmm. But he is not, because he could also stand back there and help block and, kick up the blitzes, which Houston likes to do, although they haven't blitzed as much lately. Part of that, I think, is only because...
Bet you they will Monday.
I think they're going to come after him on Monday. I do believe that. But lately they have not, largely because they just haven't had the personnel sets. They've been injured.
No.
So I do believe, though, that they'll come after him in just about every way,
shape,
or form.
Teams that have beaten the Patriots in big games have done that.
Which is why I think it's so important. So important for the Patriots to go up tempo, to go, or at least at the very least to go no huddle.
I think they go no huddle and they give the ball to Ridley a lot.
Yes, I think that's what we've seen them do this year, because that keeps the defense guessing. That keeps the defense from substituting their sub packages and allowing for the guys that will come in and do the blitzing. So you're going to have to blitz with your regulars, and you make a team more predictable when you can basically go no huddle.
And you take a little pressure off Brady, if
no doubt.
If you start by running the ball.
No doubt.
Set up your pass.
No doubt. And I think running on Houston is also going to be difficult. So I think this is a game where you might see them go no huddle, and you might see them dink and dunk and find Welker for the 5 and 6 and 7 yard completions, and, you know, hopefully, you know, throwing complete out of the backfield to Ridley or Vereen or Woodhead, or maybe finding Aaron Hernandez for a 7 yard or over the middle, or maybe going to Brandon Lloyd on those, you know, 8 and 9 yard outs that they have not targeted as much over the last couple of weeks. The game plan this week simply might call for more of that stuff that's, you know, within that 10-yard box of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and I'll give my pick a little early if you want to.
If you like.
Since we're already talking about it.
Go.
I think Houston's defense is banged up as it is, has more of a chance of slowing down New England's offense than New England's defense does of slowing down Houston's offense. And I think that's where the game hinges. I think the Texans win their third in a row on the road.
Wow.
In a close game, but I think they win. And I think that basically is your preview of the AFC Championship game that New England eventually loses in Houston.
So you think that they rematch the AFC title game in Houston?
Yeah. For all intents and purposes, I hate to be a downer, but for all intents and purposes, New England's 2012 season ends Monday night. Done.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I hate to sound like a downer, but that's what's going to happen. If they lose, like I think they will, if they lose, they're going to go to Houston in the playoffs, and that's where they're going to.
That's where it will end as well.
Yeah,
right there. So if they win,
that changes things dramatically because then they get a bye. Most likely, I'm thinking they get a bye in the playoffs, and they might escape having to play Houston.
Is Houston the one team that you would not want to face if you could avoid one in the playoffs in the AFC? Talked a little about this yesterday, and I said my choice for that was Denver.
Denver?
Yeah.
I fear Houston's defense more than any of the other teams.
Well, I'd hate to think what you'd think about this Houston team if they were healthy.
Yeah. But I think by January they could be healthier. That's why I wouldn't want to face them again.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, I'm interested to hear your thoughts as well. So, you know, are you along the lines of Eric? Do you think that perhaps that this season could be riding on the line, on the outcome of this game on Monday night, and the Patriots' future fortunes on the line as well, and that Houston is going to come in here and win one on a Monday night? Webradio at patriots.com, 508-298-0398.
My score is 30-28.
30-28.
Mm-hmm.
So you think it'll actually be fairly high scoring? I do not see Houston scoring 30 points even against the Patriots defense. The only way that happens is the Patriots have to turn the ball over. I think the Patriots defense has improved enough over the last couple of weeks. We've seen them do better in third downs, third down defense, and getting off the field, even though that was horrible earlier in the year. We've seen that better over the last couple of weeks. And, again, consider the opponent. I agree. But I think they're building up enough momentum where these guys are figuring out ways to make plays. I do think that Houston will target Aqib Talib because they're going to get to Andre Johnson at some point. Mm-hmm. So I think there'll be a lot riding on the game for him as well. If the Patriots can turn Houston over and get at least a plus one advantage on Houston, that might be enough to turn the game in their favor. I said this yesterday as well, Eric. I'd love to see it, although it won't happen, but I'd love to see the Patriots win the coin flip and take the ball. That won't happen. Won't happen.
Oh, boy. It's good to have dreams, though.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think that would be the way to come out. And, you know, because if I'm Houston, what's the best way to beat up the bully, is to get the ball first, strike first, take the wind out of the sails of the fans. Mm-hmm. I mean, so if the Patriots win the toss, they're going to defer. Houston gets the ball. They're going to go, fine. Great. That's cool. We'll just pound Arian Foster away at you for a while. which is...
And Tom Brady might not get the ball until...
might not get the ball until 6 or 7 minutes deep into the quarter. You know?
Yeah.
I could see them getting the football with about 8:23 left to go in the quarter,
yeah,
down 7-0 already. And now you're already behind the eight ball,
right,
when you had a chance to do something about it, and you couldn't do it.
Bill's stubborn. I just don't see it.
Well, I don't either. I'm just saying that, you know, now you've what you've done is that the coach...
You're right. I mean, that's a logical
and the decision,
tactic.
The coach and the decision has already put his defense behind the eight ball.
Mm.
And so you as a coach could have taken that off of your defense by putting the ball in the hands of your offense, which is your admitted strength, over your defense.
No, I agree
with
your rationale.
This is a completely and totally inane thing for the Patriots to do week after week after week. You've got to consider the opponent. You've got to have some kind of foresight. You've got to have some ability to look at the big picture in considering whether or not you take the ball or you defer.
Mm-hmm.
And they never do. And one of these days, he's going to come back to bite you. So let's take a look, because it could bite him, I think, Monday night. It really could. If you defer, and you give the ball to Houston, and if your defense doesn't make a play or two and stop the Texans, you have to put that. I don't put that on the defense. I don't put it on the defense at all, because the coaching staff had a chance to prevent that from even happening.
Do you have any doubt that the Texans will take the ball if they win it?
I have no doubt.
They win the
I think they'll take the ball.
Mm.
I mean, again, I'm just thinking common football sense. Mm-hmm. Now, I could be wrong, but if I'm on the road, and like you said, this is their third straight road game. They've won the last two. I think, you know, they probably want to try to play with the lead early, because then they can be more like the Texans, and that's emphasize the run and use the run to set up the fast and pass, and it's old-fashioned football. As Bill has already said this week, this is not a hard team to figure out. They really don't do a whole lot of fancy dancy stuff, other than, you know,
they're
exactly
that good.
They come right at you, and it's kind of like, okay, this is what we do. Stop us.
Yeah, and most teams can't.
And that's why
I'm scared of them, even when they're unhealthy.
And that's why I'm taking the ball. I'm taking the ball if I'm Houston.
Yeah, I agree with your rationale. I just don't see Bill being
rational.
No.
At all about it, because he doesn't do that. They like having the ball because
he does what he does.
That's right, because that way it gives them a chance then to maybe double up and take the ball first, second quarter of the second half, and if they get the ball late in the first quarter, then they hit, you know. And I can't say that it hasn't worked. It has. In the past, it certainly has, but it doesn't work every week. Just like I think, you know, probably taking the ball or not taking the ball, your opening kickoff decision wouldn't work every week either. You have to consider the opponent a little bit. And this is some of this, you know, myopic thought process here that drives me crazy, that I don't know why you wouldn't keep that. I don't know why you wouldn't take that into consideration. So, anyway, okay. I'm just opining.
No, it's okay. That's what we have to do.
Usually that's what we have to do. Here's Eldridge on the phone from North Carolina. Eldridge, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, man. What's up?
I'm feeling the way you do sometimes. But I think
it's cryptic.
This time he should consider the opponent. I would take the coin toss every chance I get, though, if I got Brady in the offense.
Yeah,
you know, I would do that. But getting back to Houston and us, I'm kind of weary, and because like I said earlier, the secondary scares me, man, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Best and Hartline could run pass, you know how fast Andre Johnson is.
Mm.
And then they got this other tall, fast receiver. And every time we go back, play zone or try to double somebody, they leave the flats open. You know, got tight ends in the flats or running backs in the flat. And that's even deadly there if they got either Foster or the other guy running in the flats, catching balls, running.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's what scares me the most by being the don't break defense that they're playing. And since Edelman is out, hope Star Wars pick up. But Brandon Lloyd need to change that cheerleader uniform to that football uniform.
Football.
That's what he need to do. You know, because they keep making excuses for him. And, no, you're professional. You need no excuses. You know, there's no excuses. You got to play. This game you got to come for. And with Eric, I agree with you, Eric. If we lose this game, mm-hmm. we'll lose. If we play them again at their own time,
yep.
Because see, they got a lot to shoot for too.
Sure.
The thing is, this is the first time they're gonna have a playoff game in their stadium.
Right.
And they're the best team in the record, best record in the NFL.
Yep.
And they done beat the devil out of the Ravens. You know, they stumped them. That's a good defense.
Mm-hmm.
And they jumped on Denver.
Yep.
They come and whoop us.
Yep.
They're unstoppable. They're gonna figure they're going to the Super Bowl because you done beat them. And if everybody's still there,
yep.
You got that edge. You know, you got that edge.
Okay.
So I'm just hoping the running game, you know, I know they're number one to stop, not number one, but I think number three, stopping the run, they're pretty good at it. And if Vollmer ain't up to task, it could be a long day for Ridley and Brady, you know.
Yeah, this game scares me, Eldridge.
Me too.
Yeah, I don't like the matchup at all. I mean, I know it's the more I think about it, the more I just think.
Cue the Death Star routine. Dum dum da dum da 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 dum da da. He's very nervous.
But what do you think they can do on defense wise to slow them down? Besides, if they put eight in the box, Andre Jones is gonna kill us. If they put, you know, if they drop back play coverage, Foster might get loose a couple of times. He's gonna kill us.
You
gotta take picky poison, huh?
Yeah, I mean they've proven that they can limit good backs. So I say start with what you think you can do, and that's work the run.
Right.
Get rough the run.
I think you start there,
mm-hmm.
and then take your chances with the secondary.
Well, you know what I would do though. Be honest with you, I would take McCourty, put him on the left side corner. Put Tlaib on the other corner and put Chong back there because McCourty, he's like he get lost playing safety too. But I think Chong played better coverage than McCourty does. Like he know when to react and when not to. McCourty, he's like he's still testing from all the games I looked at. You know, everybody talking about what he do. He's a versatile player. He plays safety weekly. Play corner weekly too, but he's more weekly at safety. Yeah, it's me.
I don't have a lot of good options there in the secondary, unfortunately.
Now, what you have to do with Houston is I think you have to pick your poison. Houston, everything revolves around their running game. It's one of the best in the league. Arian Foster has been one of the best backs in the league over the last couple of years, and so I think you've got to start with stopping the run. If you start the run, then at least you make them somewhat one-dimensional in knowing that what's got to come at them, which is why I think it's important you've got to get the lead on these guys because then they aren't going to, you know, they're not going to go with the run as much, and I think they just happen to do that exceedingly well.
And I think you take your chances with Tlaib on Johnson. He's the tallest corner you have. He's the most skilled corner you have. He's been close. I think some of the times where his receivers go by him, I think, especially in Miami, I know there was one play in particular I'm thinking of when he looked right over at Gregory and was saying, where's my cover two help?
Right.
You know, so I think some of that can be blamed on miscommunication in the back there. I would rather take my chances with Tlaib on Johnson than McCourty. So start with limiting Arian Foster and then put Tlaib on Johnson, give him a little help there, and see where that takes you. I think Owen Daniels is going to play a big role in this game, too.
He will, too.
Yep, their tight end.
Well, even all that, I'm still, like I said, I'm a diehard Pat fan, so my prediction is 27-21.
New England?
New England.
Okay.
That's what I'm predicting.
27-21. Got it, Eldridge.
All right. Thank you, John.
Thanks, man.
All right.
You got it. All right. So you can do that as well. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-298-0398. On the Ace Ticket Hotline, John.Rook on Facebook, at JR Broadcaster via Twitter. We're going to take a timeout, and then we've got Mark Vandermeer, who's coming up, voice of the Houston Texans, to talk about the matchups with the Texans. And, of course, Russell Baxter joins us at the top of the next hour as we go around the NFL, and certainly we've got to focus on the big matchup on Monday night. It'll all be a part of it. It's John Rook. It's Eric Scalavino from PFW right here in the playbook.
Ah, that is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of the smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'. name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the Red Zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
The Playbook for a Thursday afternoon. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino, and we need to find out a little bit more about these Houston Texans. So figured, well, the best person that we can possibly get to is a gentleman who I've known for a few years. He's been the voice of the Texans since their inception. Used to be the voice of the UMass Minutemen a number of years ago.
Football or basketball?
Football and basketball, both. Yeah. But he toils away as the voice of the Texans. Mark Vandermeer is his name. He joins us in the Playbook. Mark, great to visit with you again, my friend. How are you?
Did you forget about my illustrious UMass baseball play-by-play career as well?
That too. That's right. Yeah. That's right. You guys did everything at UMass at that time. Everything.
Yeah, we did. You know, do they still play the Bean Pod baseball tournament at Fenway Park?
Yes, they do. Yeah.
That was fun. You know, I called a no-hitter there in like 98, I want to say. I had the privilege of doing that, and I was so geeked up for it. Now, there was nobody in the building but the two college teams, but it was fun.
Hey, you got to say you called the game at Fenway.
At Fenway. That's exactly right.
Exactly. And, you know, when I tell the story to people down here, you know, there were at least 35,000 people there. So it was cool.
Of course. It was, yeah, except probably in real life it was, what, about 35 people, right?
It really was. I mean, you know, college baseball, the plink of the aluminum bat, there's nothing like it on radio.
Yeah, that's very, very true. College baseball is much bigger where you are than where we are, and you certainly know that.
You know what college baseball is down here, John? It's It's what college hockey is to people in the North.
Yeah,
that's college baseball is here.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. It's big. It is huge. And certainly in Boston, college hockey is probably, can certainly make the argument that college hockey is bigger than college basketball in Boston.
Yeah, now if you called the Beanpot Hockey Tournament, you would have had more than 35 people in the building.
No doubt.
Especially when they have it at the Frozen Fenway.
No doubt. Absolutely no doubt. So how's life treating you, Mark? I know life's treating the Texans pretty well these days.
You know, I love being here. I love being part of this thing, and it's just such a joy to have an 11-1 football team. It's funny because I remember back in 2003, it was the second year of the Texans, and the Patriots came here to Reliance Stadium, and I was talking to Gil Santos, and he said, you know, and Gil is one of my idols, you know, we've talked before, and he said, look, you're really going to like this when you have a good team. I said, I love it now. I love every game. He said, I know, you're grateful to be here, but trust me, when you have a good team, it's really different. And now I know exactly what he's talking about because he's had all that success with the Patriots. And, of course, he's been through some tough years as well way back when. But now with the Texans the last 2 years going to the playoffs and having games like this, it is another world for this franchise, and it's enjoyable to say the least.
Are you surprised it's taken Houston maybe as long as it has to round into a championship contender?
Yeah, a little bit, because when they started franchise history, they had a pretty good game plan to put this thing together, but a lot of things didn't work. They drafted poorly overall. They had Tony Boselli and Ryan Young to be their tackles, and both guys got hurt, so they never really made it on the field. And they couldn't replenish a pretty good defense early on, so Dom Capers and those guys got shown the door. And then Gary Kubiak comes in, and it takes a while to build the roster back up. And right now they have what, you know, it's just the result of years of hard work with the general manager Rick Smith and Gary Kubiak. And I think, you know, a lot of it can be traced to just drafting much better, you know, making those key free agent acquisitions like prior to last year where they got Jonathan Joseph and Danielle Manning, and just being able to rely on a good running game, good defense, you know, play the basics in the game of football, and things have been working out for them overall.
Well, and Mark, David Carr didn't work out like Andrew Luck is working out or Robert Griffin is working out or even Russell Wilson is working out for their respective teams. You know,
yeah, David Carr, you know, he's still with the Giants and he picks up a ring last year. How about that?
Right.
But, you know, the thing about David was he was a tremendous athlete in college and he threw something like 46 touchdown passes as a senior at Fresno State. The thing was they didn't have a veteran to help him learn the ropes in the National Football League. They had Tony Banks as the backup, and he wasn't the right guy, as it turns out. You needed a guy to say, David, you got to stay here at night. You got to come in early in the morning. You got to put the extra time in. And he never really did it. Super nice guy, but, you know, he didn't develop. Matt Schaub now is, you know, you say first guy in, last guy out. That's a kind of a cliche figure of speech when you're describing quarterback work ethic. It's not with him. He literally is that. He's here before anybody else. He's the last to leave, watches a ton of tape, and he's the right guy for this job. Now, thank goodness he's been healthy this year because he wasn't for the postseason last year, and that's a key element here, keeping Matt Schaub upright when you get to the postseason and then take your shot.
Also, you know, you've certainly been helped by the fact that you've got an offensive line that can keep him relatively healthy. But I think you've got an offensive line also that knows how to block for a guy like Arian Foster. And, of course, Tate and Forsett have also had, you know, their amounts of success. What makes this running game so effective? Is it the individual talent of the backs, or is it a combination of everything working together?
You know, this is the old Broncos Terrell Davis system, right? The zone blocking thing that Gary Kubiak was so good at as the offensive coordinator in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And you get so much coming off of it, like play action, bootlegs. I mean, there's so many opportunities, and I think it really helped extend John Elway's career and helped him get the most out of those later years, two Super Bowl titles. So that is a key factor. Arian Foster, though, is a sensational back. I think he would work in any system. You know, he just didn't have a great college career. He was undrafted. And he comes in here, and he's the perfect back for this one-cut zone-blocking system. And they also have other guys. I mean, Ben Tate is a good runner. Justin Forsett is a good runner. But it's really Arian Foster's show here. And he's a terrific third-down back as well. In fact, sometimes when Justin Forsett comes in on first and second down, when, you know, it's his series, if they get to a third-down situation, they'll bring Foster back in because he's a good receiver out of the backfield. They can hit him on draw plays. He can do some positive things. I just think they have a great system going right now. Yeah, maybe a lot of guys would fit in, but I do believe Foster is that special.
Well, while you have a guy like Foster defensively, I mean, excuse me, offensively in the running back, on the wide receiver, a guy like Andre Johnson, who I think has been one of the top receivers in the game over the course of the last several years, how much has he slowed down in your estimation, number one? Number two, is he still able to stretch a defense, and does he need to be able to stretch a defense?
Well, I'm hoping that the Patriots just go single coverage on him, because that would be wonderful for the Houston Texans. Yes, if they're listening, yeah, Andre can't bring it anymore. Ignore him. Nothing to see here. You know, it's funny because if Andre's healthy, he's as good as he ever was. And that sounds funny because, you know, now he's on the, quote, wrong side of 30 and all of that. But if he's healthy, he is as dangerous as he was in year two and three of his career. But he's been banged up a little bit. Now, he's healthy at the moment. Earlier this season, he was still recovering from some things, and he got off to a little bit of a slow start, had a little patch in there where he'd go through, you know, three catch games, four reception games, and then we had those two overtime games against Jacksonville and Detroit, and he went nuts. Best two-game stretch in NFL history for a wide receiver with 461 receiving yards. So Andre is extremely dangerous, and what amazes us, guys, is how often they get him wide open. I mean, that is the beauty of this offense. Because you have to stop the run. If you try to stop the run with six, seven people, they would like that because they're going to be successful on the ground. You've got to bring that extra guy up very often, and when they do, they find a way to find Andre Johnson or Owen Daniels or somebody like that wide open downfield. And it happens almost once a game where Matt Schaub will run a little bootleg, and then he'll throw it downfield, and it might be Andre Johnson, it might be Kevin Walter, it might be Owen Daniels, but somebody finds themselves wide open downfield, and it's amazing because they do it time and time again.
You mentioned just now there the guy that I'm most worried about damaging New England's defense is Owen Daniels, because they've had trouble a lot of times with tight ends in the middle of the field, and something tells me that they're going to try to keep Andre Johnson in check, but I think they're going to do that at the expense of Daniels, and I think he could make them pay.
Yeah, he's a very dangerous tight end. You know, he's been to a Pro Bowl. He's healthy now for the first time, I think, since that 2008 season when he went to the Pro Bowl. He's been dealing with a bunch of different injuries since then. And what he does is, you know, he's a good blocker, but he's able to leak out, find open seams, and he's a quarterback's best friend because he always seems to make big catches on third down and that sort of thing. The guy they also have, Garrett Graham, who didn't play last week because of, or he did play because of a concussion, but they're trying to bring him back slowly here. He's been pretty good, and I like James Casey as well coming out of the backfield. He's a fullback, but he's also a tight end. They converted him to fullback when Vontae Leach left, and they platooned him with Lawrence Vickers last year. Now he's the guy at fullback, but they can move him around, so they'll line up in an I formation, then Casey will go out and set up as a tight end, and you know they'll just bother defenses this way. But Garrett Graham is a key here because they do run a lot of three tight end sets, and Graham suffering a concussion last game. If he's unable to go, that could be a bit of a problem for them against the Patriots.
All right, Mark, let's flip it to the other side, because I think this is what most Patriots fans are probably concerned with, and that's the defensive front, you know, led by J.J. Watt. Certainly there has been, some injury on the defensive side of the ball as well. But like what we've seen of Whitney Mercilus earlier this year, Sean Cody has been strong. Jonathan Joseph, what's his injury status? Do we know?
Yeah, he practiced today, but limited. Gary Kubiak liked what he did, but they're not going to go full boat with him right off the bat. So how he comes out of it tomorrow is a key in terms of whether he plays or not on Monday night. But, you know, all systems look just about a go right now for Jonathan Joseph unless he has a setback. They desperately need him in this game, obviously, with the kind of pass-receiving threats the Patriots have, even though they have injury issues of their own. So Jonathan Joseph, very important. J.J. Watt has been an absolute monster. He's having a historic season. When you look at passes defensed and sacks, you know, if he gets one more sack, he's got an all-time record since they started keeping pass defensed stats back in 1991, as he has over 15 of those, and he'll have over 17 sacks pretty soon. He's got 16 and a half right now, and I just think he's amazing. You know, you talk about high-motor guys, and this is another cliche in football, but he is one of them. He never stops. Tremendous athletic ability, great wingspan, bats down a ton of passes, had the great highlight in the playoffs last year where he picked off Andy Dalton and ran it in. Mm-hmm. Now, he doesn't pick off too many, but what he does is he puts the ball in play with deflections, and the Texans get turnovers off of these, and they really hurt defenses this way. And it seems to be contagious. They call it the SWAT team because everybody else is doing it now. Sean Cody had one, a batted ball for a pick last game, and Antonio Smith, the other defensive end. And remember, in a 3-4, defensive ends don't get sacks, but here's Watt with 16.5, second in the league.
Right.
Antonio Smith, the other defensive end, is doing really well as well. And he's an older guy, but he's been rejuvenated by these younger players. And they have a ball on and off the field. These guys are a real tight group. They clown around with each other. They just enjoy the game so much. They have a passion for football, and you can see it in everything they do.
Am I crazy, Mark, to suggest that New England should try to run the ball maybe away from Watt's side of the field and just try to start the game off that way, set up the Houston defense with Stephen Ridley?
Yeah, I think you have to try to run the ball if you're the Patriots. I mean, I think Bill Belichick would be the first to say, maybe privately, they don't want to be one-dimensional, you know, because if you drop back to pass, even if you are Tom Brady, you know, you're going to expose yourself to some things with this defense because Watt is able to shake through. Not only, you know, if you just go one-on-one with him, he's going to beat his man. You have to double J.J. Watt. But that should, you know, should, I'll put it in quotes, open up opportunities for the other players in the front seven. They haven't been getting the kind of sack production they want from their outside linebackers. Now, Whitney Mercilus has done a good job. He's a starter right now with Brooks Reed hurt. He has 5 sacks. That happens to be more than Reed and Connor Barwin combined. Barwin had 11.5 sacks last year, and he has not had that kind of sack production this year. He's getting close. He's being disruptive, but he's not getting the sexy stats that as an outside linebacker perhaps should in this 3-4. But I would run the football, at least try it, because teams have had, I'm not going to call it success. This team is exceptional against the run, second in the league. But a lot of this has to do with, hey, they get up on teams. They become one-dimensional. They start throwing it. And, you know, they abandoned ship on the original game plan, which might have been to try to run the football. So, you know, the Patriots are going to try to do this because they've been doing it well this year.
Is this game, how big is this game to Houston in an overall perspective? Is this just another game the next week, the next one on the schedule, that type of atmosphere? Or because of where the Texans have come from, you know, in their relatively short franchise history, is there any more added importance on this game, especially for the home fans?
It's a huge game for the people of Houston. Now, they've had some huge games this year. They've risen to the occasion. They beat the Bears on a Sunday night primetime showcase game. And they beat the Jets earlier in the season when the Jets still were something, when it meant something to beat the Jets, I guess. Monday night football at their place, and that was good. They beat the Ravens here, which they had never done that before, and they beat them by 30 at Reliant Stadium. You know, so it's a huge game for this town. But I think, you know, when you look at what the importance is for both these teams. Clearly, it's important for each team. But for the Patriots, if they don't win this, they're not going to have the top seed in the AFC.
Right.
And that's confirmed all but.
Right.
So, in fact, it is confirmed because the Texans, you know, 3 games left, they're totally in the driver's seat. If the Texans lose the game, they still could have home field throughout, conceivably. I mean, it's not going to take a whole ton because they'll still have the top record in the AFC even with a loss. They have 2 big ones with the Colts coming up. Those could be trouble. Who knows? But you get my drift here. But the magnitude of the game, the Patriots have played in dozens of these over the last decade. And I know the players changed, but, you know, the most important guy is still there at the controls. For the Texans, they haven't done this, okay? They, you know, they've won on the road primetime this year. That's great, having some recent success. But the kind of scope that's going to be on this game, they have not experienced this as far as regular season action. So it'll be interesting to see how they come out.
It sounds like it's stacking up to be a pretty good one. What's the one thing you can't wait to do when you come back to New England, Mark?
Well, you know, we're not staying in downtown Boston. So, you know, Legals is out and that kind of stuff.
But Federal Hill, my friend. Federal Hill.
What's that?
Federal Hill.
Federal Hill.
Okay. Well, I'll go to the Hill. I have a lot of friends. You know, I went to BU. I got a lot of friends in Boston and in Western Mass, too, for my time doing UMass games. And, you know, it's funny because I'm telling people, hey, you want to drive to Providence? And, you know,
nobody
like
does.
Asking people to drive to the moon.
Well, a little different up here than it is down in Texas, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, Texas, I mean, you'll drive an hour to go to dinner.
Oh, yeah.
You know? It's,
oh, yeah.
It's just a different mentality
you drive
as far as driving distance.
You drive to Galveston to go to dinner.
Yeah, exactly. You'll do it. You'll do it. Good seafood.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love New England, and, you know, I have so many fond memories, and I'm just really looking forward to this one. I think that this is all the makings of a classic matchup.
We're looking forward to it, too. Good to talk to you, Mark. Thanks. We'll try to pop by and say hello on Monday night.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Mark, all right. See you Monday.
Mark Vandermeer, the play-by-play voice of the Houston Texans, joining us here in the playbook. And, you know, after listening to him describe some of the attributes of you know, that team, both sides of the ball, I can understand why you're feeling the way you do.
Yeah, I do. And more so after talking with him.
Tim says, did Eric say he hates to be a downer? I'm just checking to see if my app is glitching.
Yeah, I don't want to be, but I tell the truth. If you can't deal with the truth, listen to somebody else.
I'm concerned about this game. You'd be crazy not to, but less so for the Houston D than the Houston O. Hard to be worried about the offense getting shut down when it's on pace to be the highest scoring offense in NFL history. My biggest concern is with how the secondary defends on the play action. Every time I've seen Houston, they've had huge gains from it. I think the Pats win. I think Welker becomes the first player in NFL history to have 500 catch seasons. And I think it's foolish to say if we do lose, we have no shot against them in January. He says 34-31 Pats.
Okay.
All right. Daryl, John and Eric, ouch! I have enough faith in Bill and his coaching staff to put this game in perspective, and I think this hinges on our players to remain disciplined, respecting the run, not allowing themselves to bite hard on the play action. This is going to be close. This is going to be good, and I trust this team to see it through to the final seconds. Pats win at home, 31-27, gain 410 total offense, plus 2 in the turnover margin. See, I think the plus 2 in the turnover margin is huge. If they're plus 2 in the turnover margin, the Patriots will win. They're going to win the game.
Yeah.
He says, as an aside, how different would either of you feel if this game were in Houston?
No different.
Well, you picked them to win here.
Right? Pick Texans to win here. They would win in Houston, too.
If this game were in Houston, I'd have to favor Houston, too.
Sure.
But I give New England the slight edge here today, or at least as of today. And then Michael says, John, late start 2 days in a row? Charity event today? Traffic? Or are you just going to tell us it was just the PFW guys talking too much, taking too much time?
Yes, the third.
Yes.
Door number three.
Says, maybe Fred wanted to make up for his absence yesterday. Please be on time, or Fred may send you home and we'll be stuck with someone and something else. I was here on time. I want the record to show.
Yeah, you were.
I was here in plenty of time.
Yes, you were.
It was Big Head who was talking too much.
As he is wont to do.
Yes. Now on to my prediction in hopes of getting the yearbook.
Okay.
Somebody wants it here.
Yeah.
Patriots 34, Texans 30. Gostkowski will miss one, but the Patriots defense will do just enough in the fourth quarter to win the game.
People got to lay off Steven Gostkowski. They're acting like he's missing 24-yard chip shots. All of his misses have been long-range kicks. Relax with Gostkowski.
Okay.
He's fine.
Mary Beth, John, feeling anxious about Monday's game. I'll be watching this one in St. Augustine with my retired uncle, who, while working, lived in Cranston and was a Pats season ticket holder. Can't think of a better way to enjoy the game. I would agree. And she says Pats 31, Texans 28.
See, a lot of people have the same sort of scoring neighborhood that I gave you.
Yeah, I don't have quite that ballpark. Quite that ballpark. This one comes from Ray. He says 27-20. Nope, hold on. A different one. I got to get this to pop up here. Somehow, some way. Oh, he says, final score. Thank you very much. Brady will throw a pick. Shaw will throw two. Final score, 26-23, Patriots.
So nobody except you and me have, picked the Patriots.
I took the Patriots 23-20.
Nobody except me on the show has picked the Texans.
Right, that's true. I took the Patriots, but technically that's also taking the Texans to cover.
Right.
It's 3.5.
Right.
I got three.
Right.
So that's what I'm doing. And
but nobody's even picking them.
Paul was with you, right? He was the only one.
Did he pick the Texans also?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting to note.
I rarely do this, but since it's a huge game, I'm going to go on record.
Uh-oh.
Patriots by at least 10 points.
Really?
At least 10 points?
At least 10 points.
Patriots by 10?
Don't believe in the Texans. Think they're going to take a leak down their leg on Monday.
Wow.
Brad in Australia, love listening to your show every week. Just wondering if you see Brandon Lloyd running a lot of the routes that Edelman runs and easing Stallworth into Lloyd's route style this week.
Lloyd!
Thank you.
No, I think Brandon Lloyd is what he is, what we've seen.
An out
receiver. I don't think you're going to get anything different from him.
He says Pats 27, Texans 23. And then Steve in Killeen, Texas, not to crush Eric for not being a homer, but honestly, have the Texans faced a team of the caliber of the Patriots?
Yes, the Denver Broncos, the Baltimore Ravens.
Watch special teams play and no huddle by the offense.
Too.
Pats 31, Texans 17 is what he says. And if Eric is right, I eat crow and will pony up the cost of lunch for the PFW crew. What about me?
I know. The PFW crew. This is the playbook.
This is playbook. Steve, you're killing me here.
Yeah.
Damn.
You better clean his clock.
You kill the time slot.
Oh, very good.
It's a tough time slot. It's not really the lunch hour.
I guess.
No, you can still get
lunch.
You can still get lunch.
I would just come here early and eat it.
Right.
So you'd get me here early?
Why would
we
you
could eat? Do that?
That's true.
Yeah.
Is it really worth it?
Free lunch. Free lunch.
Is it really worth it?
Yes.
Free lunch?
He can sit in the other room if he doesn't want to hear these clowns talk.
I saw it on the front of your book, Will Work for Food, I'm pretty sure.
Wow. And Josh in Seville also says 34-31 Patriots win. Wanted to get that other prediction here that we have. All right, before we go, it's time for one more thing on the program, and I believe Mr. Scalavino will take care of it. We're stretching.
I'm not hearing anything.
We're stretching.
I'm not hearing anything.
We're stretching.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
You know what? This is a tough one because I'm trying to find a word that ties, you know, I always try to tie into what we're talking about.
Right.
And today I think, you know, we seem to be talking a lot about great expectations for a Monday night game.
I got one for you. How about Texans? What does that mean? Kick ass.
Kick ass. I'd like to try to tie it into the discussion
mm-hmm.
because that's part of the game.
Right, right. I understand. That's the challenge here. That's right.
But I'm kind of drawing a blank.
Uh-oh.
I'm drawing a blank on how to tie it into what we're talking about today.
Well, then don't tie it in. Don't tie it in. Just go with one.
Okay.
You got to do it. You got to do it.
Okay.
I mean, I realize that you like to
try. I try to do it just to try to make it relevant.
But, you know, it's not always easy to do that.
It's not always easy to do. And honestly.
So don't overthink it. Just let it rip.
Okay. Decoupage.
Decoupage? Yes. I've heard of this one before.
You have?
Yes.
Do you want to give the definition?
No.
Decoupage is, obviously you can tell it's a French-sounding word, but
yes.
It means to, like, creating a word or phrase out of letters that have been cut out from something else. So the best example would be like a ransom note. You know, typically
ransom notes are
in the form of, you know, magazines or
that's
newspaper
a
letters. That's an example of decoupage.
Right. So I thought it was something artsy fartsy. I just wasn't sure. So figure that he would give us a French artsy fartsy word.
When I said ransom note, you knew exactly what I was talking about.
As if I've done that before, right? Eric, we come from different worlds, you and I.
Yep, Texas.
Yeah,
that's a completely different
world.
That's
also very true. All right, we'll see you on Monday, my friend.
All right,
we're going to pause here. Got the timeout, and then Russell Baxter in the playbook.
Ah, that is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of a smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the Red Zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Want to be a Patriot season ticket holder? Join the Patriot season ticket holder wait list and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriot season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epocher. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
And in hour number two of Patriots Playbook on a Thursday, pro football guru, cold hard football facts, Bleacher Report, Russell S. Baxter joins us in the playbook. Good afternoon, Russell. How are we doing today?
I'm doing great. It sounds like you got all the food groups in there.
All the food groups. Have you added any new food groups that we need to know about?
No. Food groups to me are simple. There's brown, there's green. There's hopefully pink in the middle.
Chocolate. Yeah.
Chocolate. Well, that goes under the brown.
Going under the brown? Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
You know,
well,
I'm not much into the grains and the whole,
Could be white chocolate,
Very true. Very true.
All right. So before we get to this big one, of course, on Monday night, a couple of that I wanted to play around with, at least initially, and it has to do with, teams that certainly could affect the Patriots on down the line. And one of them is tonight, the Thursday night game where the Broncos are on the road playing at the Raiders. Now, I think that at least offhand, when you consider a 9-3 team against a 3-9 team, even though the 3-9 team is at home, there's probably not a lot to talk about. But you know what? Anytime the Raiders are at home and the spotlight's on them, and maybe it's just the ghost of Al Davis, I get it. I get the impression that maybe this is a tougher time than the Broncos bargained for tonight.
Well, maybe at least from the start, we shall see. But I mean, you got the team with the longest current winning streak in the league with the Broncos. And you've got the team with the, because the Cardinals and Eagles have both lost 8 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
The Raiders have lost 5 in a row. So you also have got the third highest scoring team in the league in Denver against the team that's given up the most points in the league. And maybe my favorite stat of the night, the fact that Von Miller, obviously a defensive player of the year candidate, has 15 sacks already this year.
Ooh.
The Raiders have 14.
Wow. Well, maybe not then, huh?
Well, we'll see. I mean, when they played each other earlier, it was 37-6.
Yeah.
And that was when Denver, where I think was still trying to find its sea legs, for
lack
of a better word. But Peyton Manning, and it's funny, he has already thrown 29 touchdown passes this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a comeback, and I still say the most intriguing award of the season. I know we're all contemplating MVP and rookies and all that stuff, but boy, comeback player of the year between Adrian Peterson and Peyton Manning is going to be quite the battle. Maybe we should just give it to him co right now.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
Separate what both of those guys have accomplished.
I kind of agree with that, although I think that Peyton certainly has meant more to his team overall than all day has to the Vikings, hasn't
right?
he?
Well, yeah, but, I mean, it's comeback player. You know, Adrian Peterson's leading the league in rushing.
Yeah, yeah.
And over 1,400 yards. He ran for 210 last week.
Yeah.
He has six straight. Not only does he have six straight 100-yard games, John, four of the last six he's been at least a .150.
I don't mean to undersell his performance.
No, I don't think you are. I think it's intrigue. I mean, we there's so much contemplation about Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III, and I think you got to throw Russell Wilson in there as well. And, you know, I think Alfred Morris and Doug Martin are going to get votes as well. I mean, it's going to be an interesting award season. As you know, the AP is made up of the 50 voters, and I think they're going to be they're going to have to really do their homework this year. Not that they don't any other year,
right?
But there's some really, really intriguing battles coming ahead and so on. But, you know, the Broncos tonight, I just want to keep it going. You know, you referenced Monday night's game. I heard it's a pretty big one. but next week is kind of what I'm calling the back end of the round robin, because Denver plays Baltimore next week.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
The other two division leaders
right.
mm-hmm. in the AFC.
Mm-hmm.
And while Houston is, in essence, two games up on everybody as far as the you know, the conference race goes, you know, Houston still has two games left with the Colts.
Right.
And so it's going to be very – I mean, it's going to be – I think it's going to be a fascinating finish because of things we've seen just in the last couple of weeks for a lot of different teams. And I think – even divisions that we thought were, or some people do, because of course the season doesn't end today. Divisions that some people thought were had their teams coasting to titles. I think the next couple of weeks are going to be maybe a little stark reality as to getting the deal closed.
Hmm. Yeah, stark reality for whom is the question. However, right.
Well, I mean, I can think of two divisions I think that are going to be very intriguing going down the stretch here, John. One is the AFC North
mm-hmm.
with the Ravens, the Bengals, and the Steelers. And one is the NFC East, which is suddenly separated three teams by one game.
That's true. That's true. The Giants have kind of come back to the pack. All right, and maybe we'll get to that in a second. But I didn't want to touch on the Ravens because obviously that's the other team that directly affect the Patriots. And Patriots really, I mean, we've talked about this almost ad nauseum now. We know the Patriots can win out, which is probably going to be easier said than done. But if they do that, they still need the Ravens to lose one more of their final four in order to overtake them
mm-hmm.
in terms of the playoff pecking order for a chance at a bye. The Ravens this week on the road at Washington, a 6-6 Redskins team that finally themselves right in the thick of the NFC East now, only a game behind the Giants, and the Redskins are at home. So I certainly give the Redskins more than a puncher's chance in this.
Oh, so do I. Although I will say it's a pretty – I was kidding in Cold Hard Football Facts this morning that I don't know if the Ravens are taking a taxi to this game, considering the proximity of Baltimore and Washington, D.C.
Well, yeah, it's not
exactly. It's a short road. I mean,
it's not a big road trip.
The longest road trip in the league, Miami and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Dare I say this is a
shortest.
Other than the Jets and the Giants who share a stadium. I get that part.
Right.
So it's pretty close. But, you know, the Redskins surging, three straight wins, all by the way, all within the division, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
That running game is the best in the league. A .140, 10 out of 12 games this year. I mean, that's pretty – you know the two times they played the Giants this year, John? They ran for 248 and 207.
That's incredible.
Yeah, 455 they put on the defending Super Bowl champions. And, you know, Robert Griffin speaks for himself the way he's played. But, again, Alfred Morris, the sixth-round pick, who's got over 1,100 yards rushing already. Their defense is playing a little better as of late. And the Ravens – you know, with a chance to really, for lack of a better word, put their foot on someone's throat last week with the Steelers, they didn't get it done. And, you know, I'm not one of those people that looks at schedules and, obviously you can't forecast wins going out. But the Ravens have four very, very intriguing games going out. And, you know, with Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, you know, kind of close on their heels. You know, I keep on saying the AFC East, as it turns out this year, the AFC North, John, is playing the NFC East in the interconference games.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those divisions could have each other's fate kind of determined by the other. I mean, just think about this week alone. We have Baltimore and Washington. Dallas is at Cincinnati this week, where the Bengals have won four in a row.
Right.
I shouldn't say at Cincinnati win four in a row. They've won four in a row no matter where they played. In fact, the Bengals in the last four games, their defensive units given up two touchdowns. So, and they now lead the league in sacks. And Pittsburgh has San Diego. Next week, Pittsburgh's got Dallas. A couple weeks after this, Baltimore has the Giants. So even though they're in different conferences, I think these divisions could wind up having a big impact on each other. And I get the feeling, because you have a Baltimore Bengals game in Cincinnati the final week of the season.
Right.
And Cincinnati, of course, plays the Steelers and the Ravens to close the season.
Right.
I get the feeling both of those divisions are going to go down to the last week.
Could very well be. And I kind of like both of it. You're absolutely right. Both of the divisions, because nobody's – I mean, like I said, the Giants have come back to the pack here, and I think that's the biggest surprise almost as any in the NFL right now, because it certainly looked like they were taking matters into their own hands just two short weeks ago.
Well, you know what's funny about the Giants? If you think about it in this context, John, go back to the start of the regular season last year, okay? They're 16-12.
Mm.
I mean, they're
That's going to make Patriots fans cry.
At the beginning of the year, that they would be 10-6 and miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because, of course, last year they were 9-7 and won the Super Bowl, and then the year before that they were 10-6 and missed the playoffs.
Right.
They're always around 10-6, 9-7, 8-8, and then they get hot at the right time and they've won two of the last five titles. But it's not like, you know, I know they stuck a 12-4 in there as well in 2008, but more times than not under Coughlin, they've really kind of hovered around the 500 mark, maybe a game or two above it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. They've been, I mean, yeah, that's true, right there.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
there.
Think about it. The Giants have lost three of their last four games after everybody thought they were, they had their typical 6-2 start.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. We're 6-2. Been 6-2 3 years in a row. And all of a sudden, I'm not saying they're going to fall apart, but, you know, they've got it, you know, tricky going out. And the fact that three of their five losses, John, are within the division. Remember, they're the last team to lose to the Eagles. That was a couple of months ago, I know, but they were the last team to lose to Philadelphia.
Wow. Giants, by the way, at home this weekend against the Saints. I also wanted to look at the 49ers. They're at home against the Miami Dolphins. I think most of us were fairly impressed with Miami's defensive effort against the Patriots last week, and sort of in a preview then of the 49er game, which clearly is, you know, this is the back, you know, this is the front end of two back-to-back dynamite weeks that Patriots fans have been waiting for all season long. The Niners and the Dolphins, you know, again, this will be out in San Francisco, but I'm wondering, you know, if the Dolphins move to, you know, make changes at quarterback now is getting any second thoughts.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting for both Ryan Tannehill, the rookie, and, of course, Colin Kaepernick the second year, because they both are going to have to try to evade two of the best pass rushers in the league. Obviously, Kaepernick will be, you know, up against Cameron Wake, who now has 11 sacks. He got awarded an extra sack, an extra half a sack from the Patriots game yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Just like J.J. Watt got awarded a full sack.
Full sack, yeah, right.
Okay? That should tell you how good these guys are. They're not even on the field, and they still manage to get to the quarterback. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, Ryan Tannehill has to try to get out of the way of Aldon Smith. He has 17 and a half sacks this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I don't expect a lot of points in this game. We saw last week that, you know, Colin Kaepernick, you know, and, you know, whether it's his fault or it's team breakdowns or whatever, you know, the Rams kind of stole one with Colin Kaepernick, for lack of a better word, scoring all their points for them. From, you know, a penalty in the end zone for a safety to an inadvertent pitch that wound up a fumble recovery for a touchdown. And you knew what was going to happen if they would lose a game with him. You know, Alex Smith doesn't make those mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Jim Harbaugh is going with his gut here, but I'm with you. I think the Dolphins make this very, very intriguing. And I'll just throw this out here. Say Miami does go to San Francisco
mm-hmm.
and win. I'm just saying, nothing's impossible in this league. We did see the Rams tie the 49ers out in San Francisco this year. We also saw the Giants pummel the 49ers in San Francisco. I'm not saying the Dolphins are either the Rams or the Giants. But what I'm saying is, let's say the Niners lose. And then Jim Harbaugh has to contemplate maybe another decision.
Right.
If you're Alex Smith and you haven't played for 4.5 games, your next test is a Sunday nighter in Foxborough.
That's right.
Hmm.
That's right. Heck of a time to be making changes and making switches.
Isn't it? I mean, it's just kind of... You know, it's interesting. This is an incredibly pivotal game. Pivotal, opposed to pivotal. This is an incredibly pivotal game for the 49ers in the big picture.
overall, you'd have to agree.
Yeah.
You'd absolutely have to agree. All right, I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm going to get right to the big one on Monday night. Like I said, this is the game that you know, Patriots fans have been pointing to all year long, this two-week stretch with the Texans and the Niners coming in back-to-back. I mean, you know, if there was ever any doubt about New England's ability to be competitive, to be a championship-contending team, what have you, to be a Super Bowl potential winner, we're pretty much going to know 2 weeks from today, or actually probably 2 weeks from this next Tuesday, precisely where the New England Patriots stand. The Texans come in with arguably the best team in the NFL. The Atlanta Falcons might argue that, but certainly within the AFC, you'd have to say at 11-1, perfect 6-0 away, some impressive wins already on their side. They've beaten Baltimore, which the Patriots couldn't do, for instance. They had a good win at Denver. Of course, the Patriots beat Denver here at home. The Texans run the ball very well, perhaps as well as anybody in the NFL. They're certainly efficient in passing the ball. They've stayed relatively healthy with Matt Schaub. I can go on and on. But the one thing that I think concerns us the most is that front four, or front three and a fourth, you know, linebacker perhaps rushing in, that the Texans have defensively, led by J.J. Watt, who picked up a sack, as you said, without even playing football, which shows you how good the guy really is.
16.5 sacks from that position, as you know, John, on the 3-4, in the 3-4 defense, your ends are essence tackles.
Yep.
And it's your outside linebackers who are the guys who get all the sacks.
Yeah, in theory.
And he's not only, you know, I've made this joke 100 times, so it'll be 101. I mean, he's had more batted balls than the Detroit Tigers had in the World Series. Okay? that's not even including the sacks. So, in other words, he is, in essence, dominating the line of scrimmage. He's either getting to the quarterback, or if the quarterback does get some time, he's swatting the ball away, and right off the top of my head, I know at least one of those deflections led directly to a touchdown, returned via an interception. So he's having a tremendous year. They're so incredibly balanced. And the thing that's impressed me about Houston this year, and by the way, the one win that they don't have in common with the Patriots was that game in Chicago on Sunday night. And it just showed you over the last couple of weeks that they can win a slugfest like against the Bears, and yet they can also win these high-scoring games as they did against Jacksonville and they did against Detroit on Thanksgiving Day. So they've shown a lot of range. By the way, their 11-1 record, 11 regular season wins is a record for them.
Mm-hmm.
Tops last year's season. So
right.
That only night against Aaron Rodgers, who threw 6 touchdowns and passes against them, is their lone blemish. Another thing about the Texans, and I know and talk a lot about the Texans because it's funny, they haven't been around that long, and even though they've been a vogue pick, they're actually kind of really coming into their own these days. They are second in the league behind the Patriots in scoring, which I don't think a lot of people realize because New England is such a distance from everybody else with their 430 points.
Right.
Now, what I thought was interesting about the Patriots last week was that was a Dolphins game, John, I thought, in terms of tempo. It was not the high score. It was not the 37 points we have seen from the Patriots the last 4 games. And very much like Houston proved that they could win a slugfest game, the Patriots, even with Brady getting sacked 4 times, proved that they could win that kind of a game, killing the clock at the end, doing exactly what they need to do, holding Miami to 1 touchdown. That versatility is huge. The fact that the Patriots have a ground game that's pretty darn good this year is a big key. I know they still have some defensive efficiencies, but, you know, I've said it before, 93 years of the history of the NFL, no one's ever thrown a touchdown pass from the sidelines.
No, they haven't.
And they, you know, you keep Schaub and you keep Foster, and that Arian Foster, boy, I mean, he is a horse and a half.
He has been.
He really gets it done. You know, last year in the playoffs, I thought for the first 2 weeks of the playoffs, he was the best player in the playoffs last year. What he did to Baltimore's defense last year in the playoffs was really, really impressive. That being said, you know, this is the second half of the year. This is when the Patriots play their best football. I still think this is a very tough spot for any team to go in. I know Houston is unbeaten on the road. But I think I have to lean, which I think it's going to be a lower scoring game than people think. And I think at the end there might be 1 or 2 turnovers too many by the Houston Texans, and I'm going to lean Patriots this way.
You know, I have to admit that this is very scary because it's exactly what I predicated my score prediction on. I said 23-20 Patriots. I said it earlier in the program. And I said I'm going to keep it on the low side because I'm just not sure that I could see the Texans even scoring the kind of points on the Patriots defense, because I like the fact the Patriots defense seems to have improved somewhat over the course of the last couple of weeks. That having been said, I'm giving the Texans defense plenty of credit here for being able to, you know, keep things under control against a Patriot offense that I don't know that they've really seen much of, although, you know, again, we can go back to the Denver game certainly as an example in the positive. I think it's going to come down to a kicking game, either a mistake or, you know, it could even go to overtime. Maybe Steven Gostkowski redeems himself somewhat with something in overtime. But I like the fact that a turnover could end up deciding it and giving one of these two teams a chance to win it at the end.
Well, here's what we know about New England. What do they have, 9 turnovers this year?
Yep.
Okay. I believe the Texans had 6 takeaways alone last week against Tennessee.
I believe so.
Tennessee is not New England. Okay, year after year, the Patriots do a great job of taking the ball. Just off the top of my head, I want to say in 2010, they only had the 10 turnovers, which ties the NFL record that the Niners did. I believe they only had 17 turnovers last season, the Patriots, and now 9 this year. So let me see, carry the 2. That's 36 turnovers in
3 years.
44 games?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
You know, there are teams like the Chiefs and stuff like that are near that total just this year alone.
Right. They take care of the football, and if they can do that, and I think, you know, all tight games, all playoff caliber games, whether it's playoffs or not, they're all decided on a couple of quick things. Number one, turnovers. Number two, field position. You know, so, you know, this is going to be that kind of game. And, you know, the team that makes the fewer mistakes in this particular instance is probably going to have the best opportunity to win it. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, this is going to be, like I said, it is a kind of an AFC round robin, and this is the first installment of it.
Right.
You know, it's because we have something very unusual happen this year. And it's not done yet, so I'm not going to close the door on it. But because the 4 teams that won the division, John, last year in the AFC are all back in first place this year, okay?
Right.
And, of course, New England and Denver have already won their divisions, and Houston's in the playoffs. So we knew from the schedule alone that these 4 teams were all going to play each other anyway coming into the season.
Sure.
And the fact that they're all at the top of their divisions again, in this day and age where we see, what, 5-6 teams different in the playoffs every year?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very if I remember right, last year we had 7 new division winners from the previous year. New England, I think, was the only team to repeat in 2011. That's obviously not going to be the case this year, okay, because we already have 2 teams that have repeated in New England and Denver.
Correct. Correct.
So we had a very unusual situation, but it's a good unusual, because it's nice to see these little, you know, for little mini rivalries. You know, they mean these teams, Denver, you know, Denver and New England played the playoffs last year. Baltimore and Houston played the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're getting a lot of exposure against each other. And meanwhile, you still have the other teams, you know, and frankly, as you know, it seems like 2 of the other 3 playoff teams, barring a collapse from somebody else, you know, we got Cincinnati, we got Indianapolis, we got Pittsburgh. So the AFC, we kind of know the ingredients. It's a matter of how many eggs we're going to put in the batter. Let's put it that way.
Right. And above all, Russell, here's a number for you. I know you know this number, but this one kind of put it over the top for me. And it's really one of those silly things that probably doesn't really have much to do with the actual outcome of the game. But the Patriots are 10-1 in the last 11 Monday night appearances.
Oh, I put more stock into that than you think. Okay, I do. Because that primetime spotlight is a, as you well know, playing a Monday night game is a break from routine.
Sure it is.
Okay, so yes, that is significant. 10-1 in their last, my guess is, I want to guess that the only loss there was a home loss to the Colts.
Sounds right.
Yeah. When Peyton Manning and them finally came up to Foxborough, I want to say it might have been in 2005.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, but I mean, no, I think that's significant, especially against a franchise that hasn't had a lot of Monday night exposure. I know they played the Jets on Monday night earlier this year, and they played their share of primetime games, but it's a break from routine. So I definitely put significance in that. Remember, you know, back in the heyday in the 70s and most of the 80s, the Raiders were the king of Monday night.
Right.
And that was a very, very big thing. And You know, when a number is that overwhelming, there's got to be something to it. I look at that. It's not. You didn't say 2-1. You said 10-1.
Yes, 10-1.
So there's got to be something to that.
We're going to find out on Monday.
Yes.
It's one that we're anticipating, one we can't wait to watch. And next week we'll spend a little time, I think, probably trying to talk about that one and the 49ers sojourning this way across the continent.
Well, it's going to, you know, it's why I'll leave you on this note. Hopefully the Patriots will fare better in the back-to-back against the Texans and the 49ers than the Bears did. Because right now, I think it's had an effect on the Bears.
No kidding. That's right. You know, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up because I had actually seen that earlier today. Been wanting to mention it all day long, and just I'm glad you brought that up because they have not fared very well, and it really did kind of, you know, I like to use this adage, but I think it's true. It took some of the wind out of their sails.
Yeah, it did. I mean, you know, you saw Russell Wilson last week. It wasn't the fact that they scored 23 points. Like, right off the top of my head, I want to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, and correct me later after I get off. I want to say he had touchdown drives last week of 80, 94, and 97 yards.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. In Soldier Field. For a team that's not supposed to win on the road.
Right. Pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, that Bears team suddenly 1-3 in the last four games. And, you know, again, it's not who you play, it's how you play. But sometimes when you play physical teams like a Texans, like the 49ers, you know, like the Ravens, the Steelers. I mean, a lot of teams are physical. You know, you get a steady dose of those, all of a sudden you're playing somebody else, and, you know, your body might have not necessarily recovered, especially in these primetime games when you have short weeks and
right.
Et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be a fascinating two-step. I know this. If the Patriots come out of this next 2 weeks with a pair of wins, I get the feeling who's going to be the anointed favorite going into the playoffs.
We said that earlier this week. No doubt about it. No doubt about that.
Well, I mean, listen, it's we are very, very fortunate these last 4 weeks are going to feature out so many of these head-to-heads because of how these teams fared last year. It's a lot of coincidental stuff.
Right.
And a lot of times it doesn't pan out, but for whatever reason this year it seems like it's going to.
Very true. All right, Russell, talk to you next week, man. Thanks. Enjoy the weekend.
You got it, JR Broadcaster.
Thanks. Russell Baxter, at Bax Football Guru. That's his Twitter handle, in case you didn't know that. That's where you can find him on Twitter. All right, are we going to take a timeout here? Are we going to go right to okay, let's pause here for a timeout. But on the other side, we're going to hear Coach Belichick from earlier, and then we're also going to get into Tom Brady, because I realize that there are some things that you think that Coach does say and some things that he doesn't say. The fact remains is that if you listen closely, and this is where I want you to pay attention today, just because I think he's brought out some very important philosophies concerning the Texans. And you'll hear him talk about this. And I don't know, I don't get the sense that the Patriots look at this as a unique opportunity. And I don't mean to soft sell or downplay the effectiveness of the Texans. The Texans are good. There's a reason they're 11-1. But I think the Patriots are also playing with a little bit of confidence here. And correct me if I'm wrong. I think you'll hear the same thing coming out of Bill Belichick coming up. And then Tom Brady. Todd and Bill coming up at the top of the hour as well. They're going to have Mike Tirico from ESPN, play-by-play broadcaster, will be behind the microphone here on Monday night in Foxborough at Gillette Stadium.
Ah. That is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of the smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Hope's up, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club story time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
It's really been an impressive team to watch on film this week. They really just do everything well. It's reflected in their record. I love their play. Very well coached. Got a lot of good players, good schemes, very disciplined, sound, execute well. They can run it. They can throw it. They can stop the run. They can stop the pass. Good situational team, right area, third down. Got a lot of plays out of the return game in the last few weeks, so good, solid football team. Got a lot of work to do, and be a good challenge for us Monday night. These guys are good.
You seem to be exceptionally proficient when it comes to play action. What are some of the things that you're seeing from them in that department, and how do you go about defending them?
They're a very well balanced team, so they can run it, and they play action with the running game, so. If you're stopping the run, you're light on the play action. If you're stopping the play action, you're probably light on the run. They do a good job of tying those plays together, complementing each other, and making you defend all of it. Gary, and of course going back to Shanahan when Gary was at Denver and with Shanahan, but they've always done a good job of attacking defenses and putting a lot of pressure on defenses. And he's doing a great job of it. At Houston, we saw them. We played them a couple of years ago, and still see it. Everybody gets involved: tight ends, the receivers, the backs. You know, they use all their players with good balance, and they got a lot of them.
Is it almost identical to what you could just interchange, whether it's Ed McCaffrey or Rod Smith, and put them in the Andre Johnson or put Terrell Davis in the Arian Foster role, or has it been tweaked?
Of course, it's specialized for their individual players, but conceptually it's the same offense. Yeah, and zone runs and bootlegs and play actions and a lot of formation, a lot of motion, that type of thing. Yeah, very similar to the type of the style of play that they used at Denver. Yes.
Strength for them this year seems to be third down defense. They've allowed the fewest conversions and lowest percentage as well. What makes them such a special defense on third down, and do you think some of that's attributable to being really good on first and second down, so you're forcing third and long situations where it's hard to convert?
I think there's some of that. I mean, they're a good defense on every down, but third down, they rush well and they cover well. Jackson and Joseph outside have done a good job for them all year, but they've had other guys come in there, you know, like I know McCain got hurt, but, you know, he's done a good job for them. You know, Quinn comes down and plays in their dime defense, and he's done a good job in coverage as well. So, and, of course, they can rush. They've created a lot of long yardage situations. They've been ahead, and so that's helped their pass rush. But they've, you know, they're a good third down defense. I mean, you know, one of the best in the last, I don't know, 9-10 years statistically. You know, to be under 30%, it's pretty impressive. They do everything well. I mean, they rush, they cover, they blitz, they mix it up. But you gotta really work to convert on third down against them.
Do they do a lot of situational substitutions? Or they pretty much roll? I mean, I know everyone does to a degree in this league.
No, they don't have a lot of groupings on offense or defense. They pretty much keep the same. Now, they interchange some people. Like they'll use all three of their tight ends, but there's usually two tight ends on the field. Defensively, they're pretty much 3-4, or they go to their dime package, you know, goal line. But they don't have a lot of, you know, a million different groupings.
Wade Phillips has been a very good defensive coordinator for a long time. Is there anything that characterizes what his defenses are all about in his time, whether it be San Diego or Dallas or Buffalo all the way through?
Yeah, I think he's pretty much kept the same system through all those. That their 3-4 is really a more of a one-gap 3-4 than a two-gap 3-4. You know, they shade those guys, and you know, they play, you know, pretty high amount of man coverage, which he's done in the past. It varies a little bit, but they play quite a bit of man coverage, and then they go to their sub defense, which is a dime defense in this case, where they bring in Demps at safety and whoever the third corner is. You know, they got some injuries. They've had a couple of injuries there now, but whoever that third corner is, and move Quinn down. So that's. It's not a myriad of formations and different personnel groupings and all that. They basically have, you know, the same guys on the field for a high percentage of the time. And, you know, this isn't the most complicated team we've ever seen, but they do well, and they're well balanced. They do enough things to keep you off balance, to complement what they're doing, so that they don't. You know, they're not just set in one track. They have a lot of multiples and variables, but it's kind of contained within the system, and they do it every week, and you have to deal with it every week. They're not going to let you off the hook. That they're going to give you those variables every week. You're going to have to decide how you want to handle them, and sooner or later, you're going to see them.
You know, people often say, or players, that you want to play against the best and do your best against the best to show how good you are. Is that almost the case here? You guys have a very good record, but this clearly is the best record you've played. Is that kind of a case here where it's a measuring stick, I guess, of how good you are against the top teams?
So we're not really too worried about our record. We're just worried about, you know, Houston. We know Houston's a good team, so whatever their record is, if it was 12-0, 11-1, 9-3, whatever, we know they're a good team. Doesn't really matter what happened against some other team they might have played, whether they won or lost. It's, you know, how we match up against them this week and how we do against them, so. We play good players, good coaches, good teams every week. So, and these guys, you know, they've had a great season. I can see why their record's what it is. They got a good football team. But we're really not too worried about records. We're worried about our preparation and our performance.
Tom was just talking about getting the racquetball paddles out this week. Is that a good way to help simulate these guys getting their hands up in the passing lanes?
Yeah, maybe brooms, getting a little longer. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they knock down a lot of balls, and it's not just knock down balls, it's tip balls for interceptions and everything else, so it's they're very disruptive front, you know, Smith and Watt especially, they're tough to handle.
Can you talk a little bit about Watt and what makes him such a challenge and so special?
Yeah, he does everything well. He's long, he's quick, he's instinctive, he's got a high motor, plays hard. Good balance, hard to knock off his feet. So he does it all. He makes plays from behind, he makes plays at the point of attack. He's a good pass rusher. He's got a variety of moves. They use him on different stunts and games. He's quick and fast enough to rush out of his lane and still get to the quarterback. So he's again got good instincts to tip balls, get his hands up in the throwing lane, that type of thing. He's long. So, you know, he's a hard guy to get a solid hit on because of his length and his quickness. He's a good player.
A number of injuries, obviously, pushing. How have they adjusted defensively? Obviously, they've made some significant adjustments that have had success.
Just brought other guys in there and put them in there and plugged them in there. You know, they played different guys on the offensive line. They used three tight ends. You know, got some depth at running back, got some depth at receiver. Makes guys up on the defensive line, you know, with Reed, Cushing. Same thing in the secondary. You know, they still play well.
You've seen Matt Schaub his whole career, seeing him progress. Where is he now in terms of what you're seeing in him, and how has he been able to progress to that top level?
Well, I'm sure being in the same system has helped him. And he's done a good job of, I mean, he can make all the throws. I think we know that. He can throw deep, short, inside, outside. He spreads the ball around to all the receivers. He throws to his backs, his tight ends, and slot receiver, the perimeter receivers. So he can make all the throws, and he gets the ball to everybody. Good play-action quarterback, fakes well, does a good job of the ball handling and all that. He's, you know, he's tough on that. He manages the game well. They've been in a lot of close games through the years, and they've won a lot of them. I think that's, again, a credit to him of doing the right thing at the right time in the right situation to help his team win, which is what it's all about. So. Not a lot of strong points with Matt. He's been very consistent. He's playing well this year.
Bill, in your film study, was there anything to be gleaned from their loss against the Packers? I mean, is that something you guys maybe poured over to see?
Well, sure. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. When they only lose one game, you look at that game. I'd say it was a good night for the Packers and not a good night for the Texans. But I don't know if, you know, can replicate that. You know, there are definitely some things that came up in that game that I'm sure we'll try to do. I'm sure any team would try to do, whether they play themselves out or not. You know, I don't know. But it was a good night for the Packers. But Texans have had a lot more good ones than bad ones, that's for sure. You know, they came back the next week and, you know, beat the Ravens by 4 touchdowns. So, it didn't last long. And I think we can see a number of examples this year where things maybe haven't gone perfectly for the Texans, and then they've, whether it be the Detroit game, the Jacksonville game, they're behind, but, you know, came back and won those games, or, you know, even the opening game against Miami where they didn't run the ball very well, and everybody was on them about the running game, and they came back and run for, you know, 220 yards against Jacksonville the next week. So things don't go right. They seem to get them straightened out in a hurry. And whatever happened against Green Bay, it definitely didn't happen the next week against Baltimore. And we're 6-0 on the road, so they've certainly been able to deal with that in a positive way. And that's why they're 11-1.
You brought Dante Stallworth back. What can he provide you, and is it possible he can help out on special teams?
Well, I don't know. We'll see how it goes this week. We'll see what his role ends up being this week. You know, we haven't seen him for 3 months, so put him out there in practice, go through some things, see how it looks, and do what we think's best for the team for this week.
Bill, Tom was talking about playing on Monday night, special for the players. As a coaching staff, how does playing on a Monday night change things for you or affect the way you guys prepare?
Well, I don't think it affects your preparation. You know, you have a little bit more time just on figure out how you're going to use it. What's the best thing for the team for that particular week, for that game? But I mean, otherwise, what we usually try to do is we take whenever the game is, whether it's Monday, Sunday, Thursday, or whatever it is, and try to back it up so that the time before the game is as consistent as we can be, the day before the game, 2 days before the game, and then whether you have extra time or less time and it has to be condensed or it's expanded, you just have to figure out how you want to maximize your use of that time, whatever it is, 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, whatever it is. But kind of the couple days before the game, we try to make it consistent as we can. so that the final preparations are kind of in a step that where the players know where they are 2 days before the game, a day and a half before the game, a day before the game, a few hours before the game, and so forth, so that that routine is consistent. So, you know, we have an extra day here. We'll take advantage of that, today, and then starting tomorrow, we'll have the same time that we have on a normal Sunday day game.
Any plans for him coming? You have a roster exemption. Do you know what you'll do with that?
What's the question? Do we have a roster exemption?
What will you do with Brandon Bolden as a suspension?
I don't know. We'll see how it goes this week. I mean, just came back this week. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. Well, you know, Matt really, I think as we talked about when he retired, great player for this organization at a key position. Brought a lot to the team in terms of personality and leadership, toughness, dependability, consistency. Really, he had a great career starting from his rookie year and all the way through. I mean, he dealt with some personal things off the field, with the Crohn's disease and all that. But he, I think in spite of those challenges, he really, he found a way to still continue to perform at a very high level. And I think that's a great credit to him, too, on, the adjustments and the things he had that he did on that level. He was great off the field with the team and in the locker room in terms of leadership and all that, but also in terms of his contributions to the community and, what he's done with his foundation and so forth. So, I love coaching Matt Light, and I'm glad we had him on our team. He contributed a lot. He certainly knew how to needle and irritate people, sometimes in a good way. And that was something that every team needs a little bit of, is a little bit of a lighter side of personality. And he was another one of his strengths. So, okay. All right.
Not sure what to give? My Bob's Discount Furniture gift card is the gift that keeps on giving all year long. Available in any amount and it never expires. Buy in-store or online at mybobs.com.
Let's have a big game.
Feel like it?
Yes, it does. It's December. How you guys doing today?
Good.
Tom, you see this game maybe as a bit of a measuring stick?
Well, they're a great football team. So, anytime you play the best, you want to see how you match up. I think that our guys are excited, and it's a big challenge for us. They're an excellent football team. They're in all three phases. They do a great job. So, it'll be fun.
Hey, Tom, I've seen it written about their defense that they're extremely quick and fast to the ball. If indeed that is what you're seeing on the tape, how do you combat, in general, a team that's that aggressive?
Well, they certainly get after the football. They can rush the quarterback. They do a great job stopping the run. I think, Coach said they have pretty much every statistic, that you could name. They're on the tops of the league, so. They've obviously, that's why they're 11-1, because they're playing great. They're taking the ball away. They get a lot of balls batted down at the line of scrimmage, interceptions, fumbles. They've won a lot of close games. They've won overtime games. They've come from behind. They've won on the road. They're 6-0 on the road. I think our guys understand the challenge, and we have to play our best game. I think that's what it means.
You don't typically see an end in a 3-4 defense have 15 and a half sacks. What about J.J. Watt makes that possible?
Yeah, he's an incredible player. I mean, he's the way that he gets after the quarterback, stops the run. I think he does both those things well, stopping the run, rushing the quarterback, as well as defending in the pass game with those balls batted down. So, I mean, he's impressive as a player, as you can see on film with his, his agility, his quickness. His length, I mean, his ability to, his instinctiveness in getting his hands up in the air and getting ready to jump and bat balls down. So, he's, you know, a great player for that defense. They really rely on him.
How much do they move him around, Tom, on the line?
He's in a bunch of different places, so you can't really nail down where he's going to be at. So I think that's, you know, all those different guys on our offensive line will get a matchup at one point in the game. But they do a good job of, you know, moving him around. He's on the right side, he's on the left side. He's outside, he's inside. He does pretty much everything for him.
When you're looking at a defense, is that one of the guys that you would always have your eye on and know where he is at all times? If quarterbacks say that, you know, you keep an eye on a couple of guys that can be game changers. Is he one of those guys you yourself have to always keep an eye on?
Well, there's a lot of trust that, you know, you have to have in the offensive line. So I don't concern myself so much with worrying about a particular pass rusher on the D-line. It's, for me, it's more coverage-oriented and trying to read out the coverage so I can try to get the ball to the open guy as fast as I can. It's can't be too much about looking at where they're at. I mean, it's not like there's any special formula to, you know, blocking a good defensive lineman. You just have to stand up and try to go out and play a great game. So that's what makes it so hard to, you know, for an offense to stop a guy like that who's so capable of winning his matchups.
Tom, what do you lose with Julian Edelman going to injured reserve, and what do you gain with Dante Stallworth joining the team?
Well, Julian was having a great year, so he's a, you know, it's an unfortunate injury, and I think we've all dealt with him, and I'm sure every team's dealing with important players, so Dante's got an opportunity to come back, and you know, it's always nice to see familiar faces and people that have played within our system and kind of understand the expectations for that position, and Dante's really a professional, so it was great to see him.
You guys haven't, I don't think, lost in December at home in like 9 or 10 years. Is there something?
Hope that continues. I didn't know that.
I mean, like, obviously you have playing well everywhere in December, but is there something special about playing at home? And once the game starts, are you even aware of the home field advantage, or are you just?
I think, you know, we're trying to focus on playing well, and I think the better you play, the better your home field advantage is, because the more the crowd's into it. So, you know, I think the mark of our teams over the years has been we've improved as the season's gone along, and December's the last month to really improve. And I think, you know, our team has always tried to, you know, coach puts pressure on us in practice every day to improve, to get better, to not make the same mistakes, to learn from our mistakes. And I think that we as a team have responded to that and played well. So that's what's important this time of the year is to not make the same mistakes we were making in September and to play our best football. So this will be a great week to see, you know, if we can accomplish that.
You mentioned their ability to bat down balls a couple of times. Is there a way to try to avoid that as a quarterback?
It's hard. It's challenging. It's, you know, there's ways to work on it in practice with different guys. I know Coach Belichick likes to bring guys with racquetball paddles and stick those up in the air, which I'm sure there'll be a whole bunch of those there this week, which doesn't always make me very happy. But that's probably a good way to prepare for it. It's like throwing over, you know, like, you know, this wall. It's hard. You just got to try to find an area. And we played other big D lines before, tall guys that are rangy and are really instinctive. Giants did a great job of that last year. This is another team that really challenges you to do that.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.